Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Osisko Gold Royalties fourth quarter and year-end 2017 results conference call. After the presentation, we will conduct a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please pick up your receiver and press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Please note that this call is being recorded today, February 20th, 2018 at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Today on the call, we have Mr. Sean Rosen, Chair of the Board of Directors and Chief Executive Officer, and Ms. Elif Levesque, Chief Financial Officer and Vice President, Finance. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Sean Rosen. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs, et bienvenue à l'appel conférence des résultats du quatrième trimestre et de l'année de 2017 de redevances orifères au Cisco Lité. Après la présentation, nous procéderons à une séance de questions et réponses. Si vous désirez poser une question, veuillez décrocher le combiné du téléphone et appuyer sur la touche étoile suivie du numéro 1. Veuillez noter que cet appel est enregistré aujourd'hui le 20 février 2018 à 11h de l'Est. Nous avons sur la table d'aujourd'hui M. Sean Rosen, président du conseil d'administration et chef de la direction, et Mme Elif Levesque, chef de la direction financière et vice-présidente aux finances. J'aimerais maintenant céder la parole à M. Sean Rosen.
Merci beaucoup et bienvenue à l'appel conférentiel de l'année fiscale de 2017. Bonjour à tout le monde sur cet appel. On va commencer avec le PowerPoint qui se trouve sur notre site web, qui est le 2017 Q4 year-end results. Alors, il y a aussi un disclaimer, de forward-looking statements, que je vous demande de regarder. Welcome, everybody, to the 2017 year-end and Q4 results for Osisko Royalties Corporation. We will be making forward-looking statements, so I would refer you to the disclaimer that is found on page 2 of our PowerPoint that's on our website, and we will be following for the course of this call. As we sit here today, obviously, markets are down. Osisko is trading about $12.28. We have a lot of good things that happened in 2017, so I suppose I'll start off the call. There's never been a better time to buy low and sell high, and I've never been more disappointed with the share price when I'm so happy with the company. And as we get started, I would point out that we have between cash, undrawn debt facilities, and equities over $1,073,000,000 available for the company to move forward at this point in time. And as we move forward on page 3, the Q4 2017, we had almost 23,000 ounces, or 21,000 ounces of gold equivalent ounces, earned in the fourth quarter. Revenues were at 32.2 million Canadian, with over $109 million if you include the offtake agreements, which is 135% compared to Q4 2016. Increase. Net cash flows from operating activities of $21.5 million, up 68% compared to 2016 for the same quarter. Net loss attributed to Osisko shareholders of $64.3 million, which closely reflects the write-down impairment charge that we took on the Eleanor change in mine plan. So these are non-cash attributable losses that we took in the course of the revision of guidance from Goldcorp on the Eleanor mine plan. This is compared to $8.7 million earned in the Q4 of 2016. In terms of overall, moving into 2017 is a look back record year for gold equivalent ounces, almost 59,000 ounces earned, up 54% from 2016. Record revenues of $93.8 million excluding the offtake agreements up 50% compared to 2016. Net cash flows from operating activities of $48.7 million against $53.4 million from 2016. However, 2017 was a very special growth year for us with a lot of different moving parts. At least we'll get into those numbers as we get further into the presentation. Net loss attributed to Osisko of $42.5 million. These are all non-cash items, including the Eleanor revision on the mine plan. Acquisition of precious metals portfolio from Orion Capital for $1.1 billion. The the acquisition of the 100% stream from Taseko, and an 18.5% gold stream from Aquila on the Michigan properties. We also completed a $300 million convertible debenture on a bond deal offering, increasing revolving credit facility. We also increased the revolving credit facility to $350 million. Quarterly dividends are totaling 18 cents a share for 2017. So the overall dividend for the year up from 2016. 2018, we've declared our first quarterly dividend for Q1, which is 5 cents a share for the year. Page 4 reflects what we see as we go forward. We have increased, we've increased a total of about 75% since inception, 25% happening in, from 2014-16, a 54% increase from 2016 to 2017, and looking forward to significant growth as our growth portfolio continues to execute. And we're also operating at 87% cash margin on our GOE, so these are as close to royalties as anybody in the sector is going to get. 54% increase in GOEs just in 2016 to with 18, looking for 77,000 to 82,000 ounces is a pretty strong performance in terms of being able to grow in a very competitive space. On to page 5, a little bit about the Eleanor royalty. We haven't seen the Eleanor royalty continue to grow in its contribution, even though we did have the impairment, which Elise is going to talk about. But we started out in 2015, it delivered 402 ounces, 2016, a little over 6,500 ounces, 2017, just under 6,400 ounces. And in 2018, we're looking forward to see that increase to 7,900 ounces. And in 2019, guidance based on the current mine plan would deliver 8,800 ounces to us, or 8,800 ounces to us. So we're seeing significant performance from that investment. However, due to accounting rules, we will have to face an impairment of $65 million on the acquisition cost of that asset. In terms of where we are on the rest of the portfolio, I'm going to hand it over to Elif to take you through from page 6 forward. Elif, over to you.
Thank you, Sean. So looking at our 2017 financial performance, like Sean mentioned, this was quite a transformational year for us, and the Orion transaction being closed on July 31, 2017, we only got to see 5 months of production in 2017, and we're looking forward to have the full year portfolio benefit in 2018. Looking at the net cash flow from operating activities, the 2017 numbers had a few specific items to it. The initial one being of almost $9 million of Orion-related transaction fees, which was included in 2017 compared to 2016. And I would also like to note that 2017 was actually the first year we had the full amortization of our long-term incentive program, which is over a period of 3 years. So since inception in the company in 2013, this was the first year we actually had the full cost. And accordingly, we also had the first payment of our RSUs in 2017, which will be actually on a regular annual basis going forward. In 2017, this represented a payment of $5.5 million, which is reflected in the 2017 numbers. Going forward, we expect this number to be slightly lower since the initial grant was slightly higher than the following RSU grant. Now, if we look at the net earnings loss, as Sean mentioned, a $42.5 million loss for 2017 reflects the impairment charge of $65.4 million net of income taxes on the Eleanor royalty. This royalty has been paying us in terms of gold ounces on a growing basis since 2015, and we're expecting actually a 24% increase in terms of our 2018 guidance and an additional 11% increase 2019 going forward. That being said, for accounting purposes, we need to monitor the indicators of impairment, and a sustainable level of production being lower than design capacity has led us to an impairment assessment, and which reflects in terms of a reduction of $89 million in the carrying value and a $65.4 million net of taxes. and this impairment is reversible in nature. And other than that, the net earnings or loss for 2017 was mainly reflected of the same similar items as the cash flow as well as higher finance costs. Now, if you look at the revenues, which shows a record quarterly of annual revenues of 50% higher compared to 2016, we are at $94 million if you look at the royalties and streams. We look at the revenues without the offtakes. As we had mentioned previously, I think the offtakes was a nice add-on in terms of the portfolio we purchased from Orion. Unfortunately, due to their material nature and their contractual nature, we have to present them separately in terms of the revenues and the cost of goods sold as per IFRS. But on a net basis, they do provide us with some marginal profits. And I think the next slide presents the situation well in terms of the breakdown of the royalties for the gross profit before depletion, as well as the streams and the offtakes. Now, looking at all of this, we see that in terms of the cash operating margins without the offtakes, we're looking at 92% for the 12-month period and an 86% for the 3-month period for the December 31, 2017. And we expect pretty much the 2018 going forward to be around that level of 86%. The next slide, I don't want to go into detail, but this slide basically lays out some of the details for the GEOs by product and the earnings per period. You can note that we have received 90% of our GEOs from precious metals in 2017. The next slide on the dividends, we've always said that we want to reflect the growth profile in our cash flows into our dividends as well. This will be our 14th consecutive dividend payment, which is going to be based on the March 30th shareholder base, payable on April 16. In 2017, in pretty much half year, we increased our dividends, quarterly dividends, from 4 cents to 5 cents, and we're looking forward to growing our dividend base as our cash flow is also growing. In terms of our financial position, at year-end, we stood at over $300 million in cash. And in terms of debt, with the $300 million debentures that we added in the fourth quarter, we're actually looking at $148 million of our credit facility, $350 million in convertible debentures, less, you know, some unamortized debt issuance costs and accretion, which comes up to the $464 million on the balance sheet. All in all, if you look in terms of the available capacity that we have an additional $300 million on our credit facility, which includes the $100 million accordion, which is available to us. And if we look at our cash and the available credit facility, we're over $600 million in terms of what we have, not even including the marketable securities.
Thank you, Lee. So on page 11, we're just going to take a quick pass through the 2017 activities. It was a very active year, and I think that you know, as we reflect on it, the $1.1 billion deal done with Orion, that was probably the largest royalty deal done since the IPO of Franco back in the day. As we look back at the year, we closed on a $300 million debenture with proceeds being attributed to our balance, or cash balance as we see today, post the acquisition of Orion asset base. And we increased the credit facility to $350 million with another $100 million of undrawn. So as Elif had stated, we have quite a bit of firepower left on our debt component as well. Significant expansion to the royalty and streaming portfolio. We also added Taseko in addition to Orion and Aquila. I won't go into too many details here, but I mean, these are significant assets that have been added, the 9.6% stream on Renard, 4%. Silver stream on the Bruce Jack gold mine, in addition to the offtake agreement that we have there, and 100% silver stream on Mantos copper mine in Chile, which is currently in transition, and we expect good things from that asset as we move forward. We also acquired for $44 million the Gibraltar copper mine stream, the Gibraltar copper mine silver stream from Taseko. We also acquired the offshore Osisko Bermuda Limited with the acquisition of a gold stream for $69.8 million on the back 40 of Aquila Resources, which is an asset located in Michigan. We also increased our royalty to 2.25% at Barkerville Gold Mine, that was a pretty good step forward as we were waiting for a resource to come out from Barkerville in the first half of this year, and a significant performer, we believe, in 2018 and 2019 as that asset continues to mature. Over to page 12, just to reinforce, you know, the bulk of our assets are Canadian. We have given you a sheet here of the producing assets that are denoted in the yellow color. We consider those to be cornerstone assets, obviously, Brucejack, Mantos, Canadian Malartic, Eleanor, and Renard. And then we see some of the other assets. You know, Gibraltar is a good silver stream. CB has been a great performer, a bit of a surprise, and a small investment in Quebec with Veza, which continues to deliver cash to us. And also Sasa in Eastern Europe has been a good start to it. Quali in Africa, as well as Matilda in Australia, are also providing us with revenue from offtake agreements. Page 13 is a bit of a swatch and a summary of these producing assets. Obviously, Canadian Malartic continues to be our cornerstone asset and outperformed this year in terms of what we had expected from it, and it continues to be a great asset with evolution, not only in terms of production, but also in terms of increasing mineable reserves. The Eleanor project continues to advance, and it's worth noting that we have a sliding scale royalty here that increases as total production is increased. So even at steady state, our royalty goes up as more ounces are produced. And we get further into that. So guidance for 2018 is looking good, but it did produce 305,000 ounces in 2017, making it one of the world's top 30 gold mines. Diamond stream at Stornoway, the Renard mine, 9.6% of the diamonds come to us. The mine has produced 1.6 million carats in 2018, and 50% of the steel erection for the ore waste sorting facility is complete now, so we're hoping to see the completion and the evolution of that ramp up continue to contribute to the overall value of the diamonds that are produced, and to look into broker the breakage that they have there, and we should see some increased throughput with that added facility. Brucejack, obviously, a lot of discussion in the marketplace around this mine. It's a long term asset. I think that the company's guidance for this year looks pretty solid. It is a world-class asset, and having visited the site myself in October, I was very impressed with what's going on there. And I think that, you know, that is a world-class asset that's going to be around for an awful long time. And I think that, you know, an IRR on assets like that don't really do it justice. However, we have, a 4% gold and silver stream there. As well as we have an offtake agreement on that project. Mantos is a privately run company, so we don't have as much guidance as we might like for Mantos, but from what we've seen, it's a great project, and they're making the transition from oxides to sulfides, and we were very optimistic about what happens with that project as they evolve through that step, and also as they continue to drill out where they have significant upside to add to the mine plan. Sasa, we have a 100% silver stream, one of the biggest zinc and lead silver mines in Europe. This was an acquisition by Central Asia Metals in 2017. Continues to be a very strong performer. Gibraltar, having a great year, located in BC, about 90 kilometers from our Barkerville assets. One of the biggest open pit operations in Canada, 85,000 tons a day throughput. So a significant amount of upside, nice large porphyry system there, and another great Canadian asset. CB, a bit of a surprise, I think, for a lot of people, as the ounces there will increase from previous management as Silver Standard gets into the piece. It's been getting stronger quite a bit, and the mill had record throughput in Q4 of 2017. And we think that that asset continues to grow. Page 14, just to reinforce a little bit about what's coming. You know, this is a growth portfolio, and I think that's part of the problem of what we're seeing in the market. We are exposed to several ramp-ups, five ramp-ups to be precise, and we also have quite a few development assets within the portfolio. So we have set the stage for the future. Amsler is under construction in Armenia as we speak today, as is shown in the cutout on page 14. And we think that that's a good project that's going to come online in the second half of this year. And we have quite a strong stream there, and we see that as a long-term asset. And the country of Armenia has done quite well in terms of where it stands financially and fiscally in the world. So we're happy to see the progress there. I was over to visit the asset myself during the construction in the fall, and I think the management team there has things well at hand. In terms of other assets, Barkerville is progressing well. You've seen the drill results on that one. The Cisco Royalties also owns 32% of the equity in this company, plus the royalty. So we see a lot of progress there. As underground test mining has begun, and the resource is scheduled to come out in the first half of this year. Which should be a welcome reinforcement to value there. We see the Windfall Lake project, obviously quite a big asset in terms of where we're going. That's the recipient of the largest drill program in the world, as far as I know, for a development asset. At the end of 2017, more than 24 rigs turning and evolving from. To publish a resource, hopefully in the first half of this year, and get on with a PEA study. But obviously here in Quebec, Windfall is a very significant asset to us, and we expect big things from that camp. It is an overall camp plan. Our royalty does not cover just the deposit. It covers over 2,000 square kilometers of real estate in that package. So, you know, we've laid a lot of foundation, cornerstone blocks for the future. Where the portfolio should continue to evolve and mature regardless of any future acquisitions. Falco, obviously, a big, strong deposit, showing over 7 million ounces of measured and indicated in the mine plan currently, gold equivalent, and currently feasibility is out, EIA has been deposited, and working towards construction financing and permitting on that project could be one of the largest underground mines built in North America, scheduled to look at 15 to 16,000 tons per day. Other assets of significance that we've listed here, but I won't go into them right now. Probably a good one to mention is Odyssey, which is a discovery east of Canadian Malartic, which is continuing to demonstrate what we believed all along, is that the Canadian Malartic asset is going to be one of the biggest gold belts in the world. It had 8 million ounces of historic production. Currently, the mine plan and the mineable resources would bump another 15 million ounces of that, and discovery continues at that site. So that's really the cornerstone of where we started, where we came from, and we continue to benefit from that with a 5% top-line royalty on that asset and plus some royalties on the Odyssey. Page 15, really a summary of jurisdictional risk, 104 assets in North America, another 9 in South America and premium jurisdictions, Peru and Chile. For the most part, you know, bringing us to 113 assets in the Americas, and a very small exposure to assets in Europe and in Central Asia. Only one asset in Africa at this point, and another 13 royalties that are non-producing in Australia, except for one offtake agreement. So I think. In terms of what we set out to do in 2017, we've achieved all of our expectations. We do have exposure to the ramp-ups. We do have development assets, which has set the stage to be the strongest growth company in the royalty space as we go forward. Page 16, a couple of details I wanted to get into here. We've talked about our accelerator model, and the simple numbers, $364 million invested, of which $70 million was flow-through shares, which provide less than zero cost on our taxes, so we're protecting our tax pools by making these investments. As we move forward, we're able to protect our royalty income from taxes with those investments. Current book value of those assets at the end of the year was $439 million, so we have an unrealized gain of almost $80 million in that book. We also had a realized gain last year of $70 million within the equity book, which included last year included Lyft or Rico and Arizona and a few other assets. So we've already harvested $70 million from this strategy. We invested $90 million to buy new royalties in conjunction with those accelerator companies. So if we were to reduce the realized gains from the accelerator model from the cost of royalties, we would have been paid $20 million for that royalty book, which gives us significantly higher returns than a traditional royalty investment that's run through a bank process or a streaming opportunity. So the potency of the returns within the accelerator model has clearly been demonstrated over the last 42 months. It went from conception to fact really in 2017. I don't think that there's a lot of value being attributed for this within the marketplace, but the royalties that we did earn within the accelerator model are pretty valuable. 1% on the Arizona mining assets, 2.25% on the Barkerville assets, 1.5% on Windfall, and those are the highlights, but these are much more valuable than the book value that we have attributed to them. We cannot, you know, speak to them because they haven't published resources, but some of these assets are very significant, and our cost base is one of the lowest in the industry for acquiring them. So I think that we've proven that it works. It's not a, in terms of the amount of capital we've deployed overall, we don't have a lot of capital at risk in the accelerator model if you look at the net returns that we've achieved already. Page 17, a summary, over 130 royalty streams and metal offtakes, 5 cornerstone assets, 16 cash flowing assets. A dividend yield today is actually higher than 1.3% because of the market conditions that we're all facing. We do have a dominant precious metal exposure, dominantly exposed to Canada and North America, and especially the Americas. A record number of GEOs presented at just under 59,000 ounces. And guidance for this year, looking 77,500 to 82,500 for 2018. Over $439 million in investments, $334 million in cash on the bank account as we sit today, and another $250 million in undrawn debt to bring us to over $1 billion of available liquidity in a company that's market cap right now is below $2 billion. So all in all, I think we're in pretty good shape. We shall prevail. And I'll look forward to taking questions as we move forward. Thank you very much.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. En ce moment, si vous voulez poser une question, composez l'étoile suivi numéro 1 sur votre clavier téléphonique. Your first question comes from the line of Cosmo Chu from CIBC. Veuillez procéder. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, Sean Yulith, for the conference call here. Maybe a few questions from me here. Maybe first off, on the 2018 guidance, you know, what you put out there was a bit lower than what I had expected in 2018. And but, Sean, looking through the numbers, it looks like the difference, at least compared to my model here, is the timing of the startup of Amisur, you know, as you said, operated by Lydian International, and also on Eleanor. So I guess my question is on the Amisur, as you said, Sean, you've, you know, been overseas to go visit the asset. How confident are you with that startup? And could you maybe, you know, talk a bit about the potential or the optionality or the option of the company to buy it back as well?
I'll start with the, you know, the technical visit of the site. You know, the site is essentially earthworks. It's a heap leach operation. You know, so depending on the weather conditions in which they execute this winter, whether it's a severe winter or a light winter, it's going to guide a little bit on how those earthworks get executed, and I think that's going to, you know, that's going to drive, you know, their startup date. And obviously, when you load a heap leach pad, you're not really sure exactly when returns are going to start because it takes a while to get the leach cycle started. It is, you know, somewhat a function of energy and temperature. So all in all, we've looked at what the company has said. We provided guidance that we believe is somewhat conservative.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've been around to see investors and analysts, and, you know, we've always tried to provide relatively conservative guidance, and we continue to work with that, you know, being our motto. If we get surprised, that's great, but, you know, this is the mining business, we're aware of it, and, you know, we think that a lot of these things have some upside to them, Cosmo, but we're not going to put them in the numbers for you right now. We'll wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the buyback, I'll hand it over to Joseph Delaplan to give you a bit more insight on the buyback.
Great. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Cosmos. In terms of the buyback, I mean, this is a single asset company that is going through construction right now. I think our current understanding is that we don't expect that buyback to be a priority for the company at this point in time,
mm-hmm.
Given both, I guess, the financial condition of the company and the pricing of the buyback.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in time, I'd say we're not expecting it to be bought back.
Yeah. And Joe, can you remind me again, like, how, when the option to buy it back, when does it end?
It's essentially a one day option,
mm-hmm.
And for 50%. By now.
And when is it?
I believe that to be 2019.
2019, okay. And maybe switching gears a little bit on Éléonore, you know, it's ramping up, but I guess compared to, as Elith had sort of mentioned, as compared to the technical model, it's lower than what was, you know, previously expected, and so hence the write-down here. So after the write-down, Elith, how much, you know, book value do you still have on Éléonore?
So we're right now sitting at about $300 million.
Okay. And then can you remind me again, under IFRS, do you check the impairment once a year?
No, it's actually on every period. So on a quarterly basis, we have to look at the indicators, and this is for all of our assets.
Mm-hmm. But I guess, as you mentioned now, you know, the accounting rules have changed. You can actually write it back up later on if it turns out to be better than sort of expected.
Exactly. So let's say if there was a sustained improvement to approach them back in their design capacity, then it's possible to reverse the impairment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then maybe one last question from you here, Sean. In terms of Pretium, you know, clearly they've had some issues in the past, you know, in Q4. You know, on the one hand, you have a royalty on it, so you want it to do well. On the other hand, you know, there's a buyback right on that royalty, on that stream. So how would you look at it, Sean, you know, from your perspective at this point in time, and has a possibility or the probability of, you know, the stream being bought back eventually decreased?
I think it's probably too early to say. I mean, you're looking at 5 months' worth of results in a very, you know, very high grade, you know, sort of variable grade deposit. So, you know, I think it's going to take more than 5 months to come up with an opinion on where they are. Obviously, you know, typically underground mines, if we look at Éléonore as an example, it often takes a while to get things up and running, get enough lateral development and you know, get lined up on stope preparation. I did visit the site. The infrastructure is impeccable. You know, it's a very, very, very strong mill. I don't really see a lot of problems there. Just it's really more about the execution of underground development. The market has zero patience for that. In terms of the buyback, you know, we've assumed that if it did get back, we would receive $116 million U.S. In December 31st of 2018, and if it was stepped out to 2019, we would receive over $130 million U.S. back. So that's kind of how we've looked at the value of it. However, you know, if things change and the buyback doesn't happen, the value of that asset could go up significantly. But, you know, what we've included in our model assumes the buyback. So, you know, it makes a nice profit for us on our investment, but I would remind you that we still have the offtake agreement. That only a portion of it has a buyback on it, so we will have exposure to that asset on the long term as we move forward. And, you know, it's just an exceptional
it's an exceptional deposit that's going to take some time. And I know that, you know, everybody's quite nervous whenever we do a mine startup on a high-grade asset like this. But, you know, having been there and looked at it and having worked on the geology of it, we're pretty comfortable that in the medium term, things are fine. Short term, it's, you know, it's a bump and grind.
Great. Thanks, Sean and team. That's all I have. Thank you.
If there are any additional questions at this time, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Encore pour poser une question, composez l'étoile suivie du numéro 1 sur votre clavier téléphonique. Your next question comes from the line of Kerry Smith from Haywood Securities. Veuillez procéder. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Elif, for the guidance that you've kind of given out for 2018 G&A and business development expenses, it's about $6.5 million higher than what it was, say, in 2016 before you had all the one-time costs. But it looks to me like the bulk of that increase is related to the RSUs. Would that be correct?
Yeah, exactly. So the bulk of that would be the transaction cost for Orion, which is almost $9 million, and the rest is related to some of the price adjustments. As you know, the RSUs are marked to market on a regular basis. So if the price goes up within a period, actually, you know, hits the P&L on a higher level, and 2016 year-end versus 17 year-end, the price went up for a share price, so that reflects itself in the P&L. But I think on an ongoing basis, it's safe to assume probably a level of $20 million U.S. All in, which would include the G&A, business development, net off, you know, the back charges that we have.
And in that $20
million U.S.? It's a cash basis, yeah.
Right. So in that $20 million U.S. for this year, how much are you assuming for the RSUs then?
So like I said, for this year, they were rather high for the RSUs. So going forward, we're expecting them to be lower. But then again, it depends on the mark-to-market of the RSUs going forward.
Okay. And then in the guidance for this year on production, how many GEOs have you assumed coming from Amulsar and Lamaque?
From Amulsar, actually, we were on the conservative side, and we assumed that it's going to go into production at the end of the year. So we only assumed a marginal GEO from Amulsar of 1,200 GEOs from the offtake and the stream. And from Lamaque, we did not budget anything.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Dan Rollins from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Veuillez procéder.
Yeah, thanks very much. Sean, maybe you could provide a little commentary on what you're seeing out there in the marketplace for new royalties and streams. Are there any other packages sitting around? And if so, what are the size of the packages you're looking at? And if they are sort of in that $300 million range, how can you do more than one or two this year with the current balance sheet?
Sure. We are seeing, you know, packages come out. There's been activity. You know, obviously it's not like 2015 and 16 where there were streams, you know, being issued every quarter. Most of them are to do with other expansions or, you know, people taking stuff off their balance sheet that they've kind of collected up. And the real opportunities right now are mostly on development projects. As we see, you know, project financings come together. So right now, you know, we have firepower, I would argue, Dan, for between cash on the balance sheet and undrawn debt facilities for $500 million Canadian, quite relaxed. We see some opportunities in terms of projects that are, you know, getting permitted and heading into the development stage where we would want to deploy. But obviously, some of those assets would be in our accelerator group. You know, as we see Windfall and Falco and Markerville move towards you know, towards that end of the cycle as they move from resource definition into PE feasibility, permitting, and on to mine construction. So there's quite a bit to do. We did lay a lot of the groundwork for growth in 2017, Dan. So it'll probably be a, you know, significantly less active year than 2017. However, you know, we're going to play the ball on the fairway this year and you know, just play a very conservative game as we go back. And to your point on strategy and current share prices, we do have an NCIB in place. So, you know, you can probably expect to see us maybe take a look at our own stock as a better investment than some of the other market conditions that are out there right now. If the market, if the market remains where it is on the OR stock, we're probably an NCIB executor as soon as we're out of blackout, to be honest.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
Your next question comes from the line of John Tumazo from John Tumazo's Very Independent Research. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. If the Eleanor output were only 400,000 ounces, how much would the gold price have to rise from the price effect to reverse the impairment?
Well, actually, for the reversal of the impairment, we have to look at the same reason for taking the impairment initially. So we would be actually looking at a change in the sustainable level of production.
Do you have to get all the way back to 600,000 ounces? And does it matter if it's from Eleanor or if it were from Azimuth Exploration, Sirius Resources, East Main, and those other?
Yeah, as long as it comes from that property, if we do see that on a sustainable level, they were to get closer to their capacity, we would redo our testing.
Thank you.
And then, John, just to add to that, I think where we see it, obviously Eleanor is a camp play, and that royalty covers the entire camp. So as exploration begins there, we saw Eleanor as a long-term play, and they're also, their underground facilities are maturing. I think that Goldcorp's in the same situation as we are. IFSRS rules don't really take into account anything about what the potential is. It's only about looking backwards. So we think there's significant upside in the asset, and we're there for the long term. And as the drill bit's been very kind to Goldcorp on that project as we move forward, regardless of what's happened on the accounting front.
If I could ask one more, why did you choose Arizona Mining to take a profit as opposed to other things in your portfolio? Is it that you don't like zinc, or you just thought you'd take a profit?
Well, let's be clear, John. I'm still a supporter of Arizona Mining, but to prove that our accelerator model continues to work, we have to rotate through some investments. So Arizona had one of the highest gains in 2017, and if we do see that stock go back down, we may be a player again. But we have a 1% royalty there. I'm very bullish on zinc, and as you saw, we started also sponsoring the startup of Osisko Metals this year, which is mostly dedicated to zinc assets. So it's not a prejudice against the metal, and it's certainly not a prejudice against Arizona. I think it's one of the best zinc companies out there. However, what our commitment to the marketplace was is that we would rotate these accelerator assets as we move through the cycle. We needed to demonstrate to the marketplace that these were not unrealized gains, but realized gains. Left to my own behest, I probably would have kept the position, John. But we felt from a market standpoint that we had to prove that our investment strategy was sound, and we had to demonstrate the returns in an empirical way. So that's where we are, in terms of what we do. And, that was the first one that we had evolution on. And they got to basically a feasibility study, and then there's a permitting cycle. So I won't go on too much more, but we're quite supportive of Arizona. I think they've done a fantastic job, and obviously it's gone up in value since we sold it. So.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from private investor George J. Please go ahead for your publicity.
Greetings, Sean. I've been a long-term shareholder in Barkerville Gold and predecessor companies, and I have a really strong belief in the value, long-term value of the Caribou Mining District. And what I'd like to know, as we outside shareholders at Barkerville are curious about, you've had drilling going on for the last year or so with up to 10 drill rigs going. We've had some great intercepts. But at the same time, we haven't had this 43-101 new statement of exactly what kind of an increase we built in the resource up there. So would you comment on that, please?
Well, obviously, given the history of resources on this property, we're extremely prudent in terms of what we would put out in a 43-101 qualified resource. The definition drilling is still ongoing. We had quite a bit of success in defining resources outside of the previous known zones at Cow Mountain. So we continue to work on that, and we are closing up the database and doing wireframing as we speak on that asset. And, you know, obviously whatever resource does come out of there has to be extremely conservative given the history of the property. It's narrow vein, you know, high-grade systems, which are demonstrably hard to manage under 43-101, but we think that we've done a pretty good job of introducing a high level of QAQC in terms of what's there now, and when we do publish a resource, we expect it to be very solid. So you'll see something hopefully in the first half of this year, as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, it would be my hope.
Okay, thank you, Sean. Now, one more thing would be, you obviously have a lot of influence on the Barkerville board and encourage Chris Lauder in so many ways. I'd like to know whether you are encouraging him with regard to promotional work and getting institutional interest in Barkerville.
The short answer is yes. Chris has been on the road quite a bit, and I think that the really, you know, between the legacy issues surrounding Barkerville and the pending resource, that's where the market sits. We're in a show-me market, and we'll have to get a resource out to take advantage of all the work that Chris has done. I know he was in Europe last week, and he's been significantly marketing out there as we speak. But, you know, we're battling the history of the project, and I think that until the new resource is published, we're probably, you know, still facing a bit of a headwind, to be honest.
Terrific. Appreciate that. Cheerio.
Sure. Thanks very much. That concludes our conference call for today. Ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you to buy low and sell high, as I will as soon as I'm out of blackout. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect. Ceci met fin notre appel conférence d'aujourd'hui. Vous pouvez maintenant raccrocher.